The Trump administration has sent envoys to Copenhagen to make a new American pitch to control Greenland for U.S. security. While some see this as a wild new idea, it turns out America has long had designs on the Danish territory. History, it is easily perceived, is a picture gallery containing a host of copies and very few originals, wrote French historian Alexis de Tocqueville. U.S. Secretary of State William Seward, who spearheaded the purchase of Alaska, also commissioned a survey of the Danish territory in 1867, Mark Sappenfield and Audrey Thiebert report in today's lead article. In 1910, the U.S. ambassador to Denmark proposed an exchange in which the United States would take control of Greenland. And in 1946, the U.S. offered $100 million in gold for the island. The value might have spiked since then, but a checkbook may not be necessary. The article details a long-standing framework for U.S.-Danish cooperation that already offers a solution to shared Arctic security. It's Thursday, January 15th. This is the Monitor Daily Podcast. Good morning. I'm Krista Case Bryant. First, our curation of news briefs from Monitor writers around the world. Many of these are developing stories. Find the latest updates at csmonitor.com/newsbriefs. China's trade surplus hit a world record at close to $1.2 trillion in 2025, the government in Beijing announced on Wednesday. Other countries, especially in Southeast Asia and Africa, have made up for the drop in exports to the United States caused by higher tariffs. Electronics and electronic equipment led the way, with car exports also surging. Still, some experts say China's sustained growth will depend on domestic spending as well. The Democratic Republic of Congo is sending its first copper shipment to the U.S. under a new strategic partnership, Semaphore reports. Copper is essential across industries, used in everything from wiring to motors, and demand has raised concerns about potential shortages. Congo has long exported much of its copper to China, but state miner Jacobine views the deal as a way to regain sovereignty over the country's minerals after decades of foreign influence. Researchers spotted 33 right whales off Cape Cod Bay this past weekend, an encouraging sign for the critically endangered species, which was nearly wiped out by hunting in the 1800s. With only around 380 individuals left globally, right whales face threats from boat strikes, fishing gear, and other human activities. But scientists have noted that more calves are being born and the population is growing. One observer called it exceptional to see so many whales this early in the season. Now, today's Monitor stories. As always, you can go to csmonitor.com for our latest news. The United States has attempted to annex Greenland several times in the past, but it also has a history of cooperation with Denmark on Greenland's security, so much so that it's dubious that direct control would be better for U.S. defense. Mark Sappenfield and Audrey Thiebert report from Berlin and Boston for The Monitor. When the United States struck Venezuela on January 3rd, almost a third of those killed were Cuban nationals. Their presence in the country shows Cuba's soft power in Venezuela and elsewhere. Whitney Ulick reports from Mexico City for The Monitor. A spat over Yemen has spiraled into what is being called a diplomatic divorce between the United Arab Emirates and Saudi Arabia, both of which are vying to lead the Middle East into a new era of stability. How does this affect post-civil war Syria and a path forward in Gaza? Taylor Luck reports from Amman, Jordan, for The Monitor. Africa has some of the world's youngest populations and some of its oldest leaders. In Uganda, young voters must decide between a 40-something former pop star and a sitting president in his 80s. Contributor Sophie Neiman reports from Kampala and Mbarara, Uganda, for The Monitor. Lexicographers used to take decades to decide which new words to add to a dictionary. Now, words trend online with head-spinning speed, forcing dictionary makers to adapt. The coevolution of language and culture makes a fascinating study, as one journalist learned during a stint at Merriam-Webster, this book review reveals. Contributor Barbara Spindell writes for The Monitor. Now, commentary from The Monitor's editorial board on the duo tapping a new Japanese-Korean beat. For years, two of America's closest allies, Japan and South Korea, have mostly marched to the beat of their own drums. As neighbors in Northeast Asia, they have often cooperated. But the brutal history of Japan's 1910 to 1945 occupation of the Korean Peninsula was always an emotional backbeat, preventing close ties. On Tuesday, after a bilateral summit, their leaders, who both took office last year, changed the tempo quite a bit. In a gesture purposely human rather than diplomatic, Japanese Prime Minister Takaichi Sanai and South Korean President Lee Jae-mya sat down and played the drums together. They performed the song Golden from the 2025 animated film K-pop Demon Hunters. Ms. Takaichi had once been a drummer in a heavy metal band, while Mr. Lee had long dreamed of playing drums. The symbolism of sharing music was made even stronger by the fact that each leader represents a political faction in their country, prone not to compromise on moving beyond remaining differences or grievances over their shared 20th century history. Any agreement between these two leaders is more likely to stick than previous attempts to reach closure on the past. "There are uncomfortable and difficult aspects to our relationship," Mr. Lee said, "but there are also constructive ones. The task before us is to strengthen the latter and prevent the former from defining our future." The warming of ties was enhanced by the Japanese leader holding the summit in her hometown of Nara. The ancient capital is a place where Japan adopted much of Korean culture centuries ago. They toured a temple founded around AD 607, a gesture reflecting a new focus on a history that binds the two nations. Each country has external reasons to draw closer. Both China and the United States have created new uncertainties in the region, while North Korea continues building up its nuclear and missile arsenal. And technological frontiers, including artificial intelligence, compel each nation to cooperate. As the global landscape grows increasingly turbulent, the South Korea-Japan relationship has become more vital than at any point in history, Mr. Lee said. To ensure a future-oriented relationship, the two leaders decided to proceed with small humanitarian gestures to deal with the injustices of Japan's colonial legacy. They will jointly identify the remains of Korean forced laborers killed at a Japanese mining tragedy in 1942. And the two countries are working on identifying Korean victims of a passenger ship that exploded in 1945. They also appear ready to seal agreements on trade issues. Writing in Foreign Affairs, Brandeis University professor Ayumi Teraoka noted, "This unlikely duo could be precisely the partnership needed to put the Japanese-South Korean relationship on a more resilient footing." The stories you just heard are from today's newsletter. Find these stories and more at csmonitor.com. For more Monitor podcasts, go to csmonitor.com/podcasts. For other audio offerings from our parent organization, go to christianscience.com/audio. Today's Christian Science Spiritual Perspective contributor shares how, when life seems out of balance, we can find the constant good that comes from acknowledging God as divine life. Find the full column at csmonitor.com/csperspective. Thanks to today's audio production team, Tim Malone, Audrey Thiebert, and Mackenzie Farkas.
This podcast is produced by the Christian Science Monitor in Boston, Massachusetts, United States of America. Copyright 2026.